Blog Talk Radio.
We are on the air for Fan for Racing, Fan to Fan, NASCAR and Race Talk. This is Monday, December the 7th, and once again, we have a great lineup in store for all of our listeners tonight. Now, joining me is going to be our stand-in co-host for tonight, Brian Everly. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Hey, Sharon. How you doing? Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's always a pleasure, Brian, and I'm really glad that you were available. Sal Sagala was at the Snowball Derby this weekend doing photography, and if you followed him, you saw a lot of his photos over the weekend, but he is now taking a vacation time, so he was not available for tonight's show, and I really appreciate you being available.
Oh, great. It's always great to be on, and I always enjoy our Monday night shows, and we got couple of solid guests again lined up tonight, so looking forward to talking to them as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. In fact, at 9 o'clock, joining us will be Rob Blount from Speed51.com. He's the Northeast editor at Speed 51, but he's going to help us break down what happened in the Southeast this weekend with the Snowball Derby in Pensacola, Florida. There was a lot of drama and a lot of excitement this weekend with both the Snowflake and the Snowball Derby out there.
Yeah, definitely. Unfortunately, I was what I like to call adulting yesterday and had a lot of things to take care of, so I wasn't able to purchase the pay-per-view, but I was following along with a lot of the tweets and updates and obviously the post-race technical inspection process. So, yeah, it was quite interesting, and it'd be great to get Rob's take on kind of what went down there yesterday and kind of everyone's thoughts on the finish and how things played out.
Absolutely, and we will definitely go into that in more detail during that 9 o'clock half hour. At 9:30, though, Brian, we have Ty Majeski is going to be joining us. Ty took the pole by breaking the record, the qualifying record at Five Flag Speedway for the Snowball Derby. And that was all part of the drama, too, because Christopher Bell actually had the fastest car, but he had a disqualification that pushed him to the back of the field for the start of the race.
Yeah, it's a great run for Ty, and as like I said, always impartial to the guys that are from the Midwest, so it'll be great to have him on the show and talk about his third-place finish, a well-deserved run for Ty.
Absolutely. Ty is from Wisconsin and runs the Midwest ARCA Racing Series Tour, so that's pretty exciting. He also finished in the top 10 in the Wheel and All-American Series for NASCAR at La Crosse. So he's done some racing. I have to ask him, I've seen some things that said that this was a debut race for him, but I just read another article that said that he actually had a spin-out during qualification and had to go to the last chance qualifier race last season. So I'm not sure if he actually raced last season or not. We'll have to ask him about that. But I thought he did quite well with not only breaking the record and taking the pole for the Snowball event, but he also finished third in the actual Snowball Derby.
Yeah, and I think he's catching the eyes of some of the right people as well. I saw Ray Dunlap sent out a tweet yesterday after the race, and you know that if you're not don't have your eyes on him or you're not following him yet, you should do so. So I mean, I think that you know when you have a solid performance like that and catch eyes of the people that have been around the sport for a long time and know how to look for talent, I think that's a great thing. So I'll be curious to see what that meant to him when we talk to him a little later on.
Absolutely. I saw that same tweet, and Ray Dunlap actually did a hashtag for it saying he's the real deal. So So I'm excited to have him on the show and looking forward to chatting with him as well. And you're right, I think he's catching the eye of a lot of people with his Snowball Derby appearance, and we'll see what happens. He also took the Governor's Cup, by the way, down at New Smyrna. So he's also the Midwest Tour for the ARCA Racing Series. He was the champion and rookie of the year in 2014. So he's had some success that got him to where he is now. But I think the 2016 season could be a pretty exciting season for him.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe he can add some color for us on what exactly his plans are for 2016 and what he's looking to do next year.
Absolutely, and we'll definitely talk with him about that. And then you and I will probably go ahead and close up the show. We'll have about 10 minutes after we talk with Ty, and we're not going to have a NASCAR Hot Topic sound-off tonight, Brian, because Chris Knight is not available for tonight's show, but he told me he's really, really, really going to try to be with us next Monday night. And we'll, on that show, we're going to try to do a recap of the three series and kind of a preview going into 2016, going over all the silly season changes and all of that. We'll talk a little bit about that tonight, but I'm sure there'll be more to talk about come next Monday night. So look for Chris Knight to rejoin us on Monday night. Then, just as a heads up for all of our listeners, we are taking a two-week vacation. We'll be off the Monday before Christmas. We'll also be off the Monday before New Year's. But we do plan to return right back here to our Monday night schedule after Christmas, and we'll be back on the air for the January 4th episode. So stay tuned for that information as it becomes available. So with that, we've got a lot of big news that came out this week and in the last week or so, is that Brian Pemberton is leaving NASCAR as the director of competition at the end of this season. And then taking his place is going to be Scott Miller, who was the competition director at Michael Waltrip Racing. He also was at Richard Childress Racing before that. So I wanted to get your thoughts about those changes. Was that something you expected, or did that come out of the blue for you?
You know, I think I found it a little bit surprising. Obviously, Pemberton's been around the sport for a long time. You know, and given the plans for some changes in the competition package already next year, I kind of expected him to still be involved with that, heavily involved, honestly. But, you know, it's always good to get some, you know, fresh blood and fresh perspective in there as well. So hopefully, all in all, it'll be good for NASCAR and the sport as a whole. But what were your thoughts on that? That comes as a bit of a surprise to you as well?
Yeah, it really did. I wasn't expecting that at all. So, you know, to hear that announcement was a huge surprise, because he has been such a huge part of this sport and a part of a lot of the changes that have taken place within NASCAR over the last several years. So it'll be interesting to see what Scott Miller does in that role. He's been a competition director at the team level, but now he's going to be a competition director across NASCAR. So I think it's going to be a whole new ball game for him. But I think he might do a pretty good job. Your thoughts there?
Yeah, I do, and I think he's got a great, well-rounded background as well. You know, he served as a crew chief before. His most successful season in 08 was when he was with Jeff Burton for, like, they had two wins and 18 top tens that season. So, I mean, he's got some of that experience from the competitor perspective in him as well, and I think that'll bring a good, unique perspective to what he's doing now at the senior VP level of competition. So I think it'll be hopefully a positive change and maybe a bit of a breath of fresh air for everyone, and hopefully we'll see some great things to come in 2016.
Yeah, I'm really anxious to see what 2016 does bring for us. I'm looking for some more changes to be announced, as there's still quite a few question marks. And we'll see what happens there. But I think this year there were a lot of changes within NASCAR. And I think for the most part, most of those changes were pretty good for the sport.
You know, yeah. I mean, I think sometimes maybe almost too much change with everything going on for everyone to keep up with and keep track of. But I'm really looking forward to the, you know, the new competition package for next year. I'm really hoping that improves the racing at the cup level, especially on the mile and a half tracks. And I hope that gives us a little bit more action, you know, from that standpoint. And hopefully we'll have maybe a little bit less controversial of a chase next year. We can focus on the racing on the track and not restart zones and whether or not it was a restart or not, whether or not a car 10 laps down is going to be wrecking the leader. So I'd rather talk about how great the racing is on the track than some of the drama we had in the chase this year. But again, it was another interesting season that will keep me watching really no matter what happens. So, but what was your kind of take overall on 2015, Sharon?
Well, I thought 2015 was a step in the right direction. I agree with you. We're not completely there yet, and I'm anxious to see what the package for 2016 does bring for us. I was kind of highly hoping that there would be more passing in 2015 with the package that they brought into the season. And I think the drivers were still struggling with that ability to pass throughout the race. So I'm anxious to see what happens next season in that regard. And I, like you, some drama is just part of the nature of the game here, but we had more than our share of drama in this year's chase. So I think it would be interesting to see what Scott Miller does in that regard to kind of minimize that kind of drama going into next year's chase, because we all know that drivers are going to do whatever they can get by with. I think there has to be a line drawn in the sand for them so that they know where that line is. And it'll be interesting to see if Scott Miller defines that line or if it still is a little bit murky going into the 2016 chase. All things that we'll have to stay tuned for.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. And kind of while we're on the topic of the chase, too, I mean, I know the idea has kind of been floated out there about the Xfinity and Camping World Truck Series potentially implementing some sort of version of the chase. And I just saw a piece by Dustin Long today where he got Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s thoughts on it. And Jr. seemed to be on board with it, which I found a little bit surprising. I don't know that I want to see the chase at the Xfinity and the Truck Series levels, but what are some of your thoughts on that, Sharon? What do you think about bringing the chase to the two lower series?
Well, I agree with you. Since we're on the chase, we might as well talk about that. I was kind of interested that Dale Jr. kind of endorsed the idea of having a modified chase, if you will, not maybe exactly the same kind of chase that we have in the Sprint Cup Series, but a modified chase in the Xfinity Series and in the Camping World Truck Series. And I think what's really going to be interesting is how they modify it for those two series, because they have a shorter season than the Sprint Cup Series does. I think the Sprint Cup Series with 36 races, having those last 10 races being their chase, makes it pretty conducive. But, you know, especially the Truck Series, they start out so slow at the beginning of the season. They pick up momentum and then they slow down again. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how they modify that if they do go with that concept. As far as adding excitement, I kind of agree with Dale Jr., when he was talking about, you know, in the last couple of seasons, we've kind of known, even though this year there was still a little bit of unknown, we really kind of knew going into the season finale who those champions were going to be in those two series. Where we don't necessarily know that going into the finale for the Sprint Cup Series. And I think adding that element to those two series will make it a lot more exciting for fans as well. And when you think about it being a triple header weekend with all three of those series determining their champion over that weekend, talk about a Super Bowl moment. that's going to be, I think, as huge or bigger than what the Super Bowl is if they do that for the bottom two series. Now, I know a lot of the fans are probably going to resist because, Brian, you and I know that fans resist change. but I'm kind of a let's wait and see what happens. Let's wait and see what it is before we make a judgment on whether or not we're going to like it or not like it.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. You make a great point about the truck series as well, being already a shortened, 23-race season compared to the Cup. You know, you can't just take and say, all right, the final 10 races are going to be our playoffs. So obviously it would have to be some sort of modified format. But, yeah, ultimately I'm with you. I mean, it's kind of a wait-and-see approach on it. I'm open to them trying something. I'm also fine if they leave it the same. I'd love to see something where they can get even more of a focus at the Xfinity level on those full-time drivers, because so much of it's, dominated by the Cup guys. But again, short of eliminating altogether the number of Xfinity races the Cup guys can run, I don't really know what else they can really do at that level. And, obviously from a business and sponsorship point, I don't know that limiting the Cup guys or eliminating them altogether is really the right call either. So hopefully whatever format is decided, it does put a little bit more focus on those guys that are running the full Xfinity Series season.
Well, I think that's an excellent point, though, Brian, because it is a business. And bottom line, NASCAR is a business, and those Cup drivers are bringing sponsorship dollars into both of those series. And we've talked about it a lot on this show, how Kyle Busch, Brad Keselowski, and some of these drivers, Dale Jr. now is doing the same thing, are helping a lot of these young drivers make that transition from the lower tier series into the Camping World Truck Series and the Xfinity Series. And if you take them out of that, what's that impact going to be?
Right.
So that's certainly a big consideration in putting together a Chase package. The other concern that I have when you're thinking about the Chase, and I'm trying to look at this from all sides, is we saw some of the stuff that goes on in the Sprint Cup Series. Those guys are the role models for the Xfinity Series and the Camping World Truck Series. So that makes it even more important, the role that Scott Miller is going to play as a competition mm-hmm. director when they're considering these changes in those two series. Because I think that, they have to draw a very firm line in the sand for these drivers, not just at the Sprint Cup level, but if they do a chase format in the other two levels, they're going to have to do the same thing there. And I really hope that the Sprint Cup Series guys can be, I don't want to say better role models. I mean, they're outstanding drivers. But I don't think they represented themselves in the best possible light during this particular chase.
Yeah, that may be the best politically correct way to say it. I think overall, what we saw with some of the stuff at the Cup Series, I mean, surprising on the actions of some drivers, I think, a little bit as well. But, yeah, I think that the most interesting thing will be at the Xfinity level if they do go to a chase format. And then if you still have all these Cup guys that dip down and run, they're obviously not running for the championship, but they'll be up there at the front of the field as well. I think that just kind of opens up a big can of worms on, potential for, off-track drama and fights and things like that going down with, so many good Cup drivers battling up there with those guys running for the Xfinity Series Championship as well. But can't get too far ahead of ourselves, I guess. We'll have to wait and see if and when they do come up with something, and then I guess watch how it plays out from there.
Absolutely, but certainly I think we've created some interest for fans going into this 2016 season with some possibilities. And I'm always disappointed that some fans are so resistant to change. And we always hear it that some fans, well, I'm not going to watch anymore. I've had it, and all mm-hmm. of that kind of stuff. I grow a little bit weary of hearing that because I see those same people back week after week.
Exactly.
You know, even though they say they're never going to watch again. So, you know, it makes it hard for NASCAR to really listen to the fans when there's so many naysayers out there that aren't really looking at the sport from an objective mm-hmm. perspective. So I guess I just want to throw out there that as fans, let's try really hard in 2016 to take a more objective look at what's happening within NASCAR. We're never going to see the NASCAR of the 1940s, the 1950s, 60s, 70s, 80s, or 90s. This is the NASCAR of 2016, and it is a far different NASCAR. And what they have to think about is the NASCAR of the future. And those fans that were following in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, you know, let's face it, they're not going to be around forever. The future of NASCAR are the fans of today. And that's what NASCAR as a business, they have to look at that. And they have to mm-hmm. manage their business accordingly. And, you know, I think that's a realistic way of looking at some of the changes that NASCAR is making.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you make a great point about that. And, you know, when people say they're not watching anymore, I mean, you look at the ratings numbers and, you know, Homestead was the most watched season finale since 2005. So while people may still be speaking out on, you know, Twitter, Facebook, whatever, saying, you know, I'm not watching, I don't like this, obviously people are watching. It was the most watched finale since 2005. So mm-hmm. obviously there are people watching regardless of how ridiculous some may have seen this year's chase be. You know, it is a system, and it is, I mean, entertaining, I guess. You never know what's going to happen.
Well, it certainly adds some interest.
Yeah, for sure. Go ahead.
I was going to say, it certainly adds some interest, and although it may not reflect on the individual drivers in their most favorable way, it does add interest to the sport. And you know, from a marketing perspective, sometimes negative publicity brings more people to the sport than if it's the same old, same old. So not something that I always necessarily agree with as a fan. I want to see them go out there and race each other and be competitive on the track. But at the same time, again, you know, we all have to look at what the reality of what is going on, too. So, you know, one of the people that is probably the most, and I'm not going to mention names here, but one of the people who is probably the most controversial and instigates most of the controversy on and off the track is also a promoter of sports entertainment. So, you know, when you take that into consideration, you've got to halfway expect that from some individuals.
Yep, exactly.
Okay. So, let's talk about the banquet. I didn't get to see, like you, I did not get to see the banquet in its entirety, but I did listen to some of the speeches that were made and some of the comments that were made, and I got to tell you, it was, I think, a pretty good event. One of the things that kind of impressed me was that our champion brought his child to be able to kind of, even though he's a youngster of what? I think he's the same age as my grandson who just turned 6 months. he's not going to remember a whole lot from this, but just the fact that he had his entire family there to kind of celebrate this accomplishment, I know meant a lot to Kyle Busch and Samantha Busch. But we also saw Jeff Gordon bringing his son and daughter, who did stay for the entire event. He wanted them to be a part of this. That's something that he's always talked about. And I really enjoyed that he did that. I really respect that he did that, and thought that was a good thing to see.
Yeah, it was. And obviously, his speech was you know, brought tears to many people's eyes, himself included. And, you know, it was pretty awesome to see Tom Cruise there, even as a surprise to Gordon to be the one to introduce him. I thought that was pretty cool and unique, and you know, to have that kind of be a surprise and something you don't really see much anymore. Things always seem to kind of leak out, and everyone knows things are going to happen before they happen. So, I mean,
yeah,
I think,
saw something, Brian, I saw something that said that their code word for Tom Cruise beforehand was the client. So that Jeff Gordon would have no idea who they were talking about and his role. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was. And I mean, I think all drivers that gave speeches, I think, did a great job and professional job. And I think my other highlight was Joe Gibbs defining Kyle Busch as brash was the word he used for when he first kind of came into the sport. And I think it still plays a part somewhat today. But I mean, I do think we have seen him kind of mature a little bit, grow up a little bit, and hopefully he'll continue that and represent the sport as a great champion.
Yeah, and I thought his tribute to his wife at the very end of his speech, Kyle Busch really gave a touching tribute to his wife, Samantha Busch. It brought her to tears as well. And I do agree that he has matured a tremendous amount over the last year. And I think Samantha Busch had a lot to do with that. I think his injury and the birth of his son all played into the maturity and kind of a different point of view for Kyle Busch this season.
Right, yeah, and let's not forget, too, Adam Stevens getting the championship in his rookie season at the Cup level. Obviously, he and Kyle gelled together pretty well when they were together at the Xfinity Series level. And I think them working together, Adam obviously was probably a big part of that as well, especially in the early part of the season working with, you know, Crafton and David Reagan and Eric Jones, and they had them in the car as well to, you know, keep that whole team up to par for when Kyle did come back. I think that, you know, that maybe gets overlooked a little bit with what Kyle overcame, but I think Adam Stevens was quite impressive on top of the pit box this year as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. When you think about what he dealt with all the different drivers in the car, and with Kyle Busch coming back to get all of those wins to get him to be eligible for the chase, and then to move him into the top 30, the final qualification segue there, I think it was fabulous, and it was great teamwork, and I think that they have a tremendous amount of respect for each other, and I'm wondering if that isn't the new Jimmy Johnson Chad Knaus matchup.
That's a good point. It very well could be. Be interesting to see how they come back to defend next year. And you know, I do think that's the other thing too. I think this chase format makes it so hard to repeat and to come back. You know, I don't think we'll ever see anyone, especially in this format, do what Jimmy Johnson did, winning all the titles in a row. So I think repeating will be a very tall task, but definitely interesting to watch in 2016.
I agree, you know, as this season was unfolding in those final 10 races, it came out that Jimmy Johnson played a role in putting together the chase format, and that ultimately this was the end game for NASCAR, is to have this kind of chase elimination format, but they felt it was way too much change for fans to be able to digest when they first instituted the chase format. So to see them having evolved to the point that they had originally intended to be, I think was a great thing. And to know that Jimmy Johnson played a role in that, I thought that was pretty insightful as well, especially when you bring up how difficult it's going to be for drivers to repeat under this chase format. And we know that Jimmy Johnson had several years there where he was a repeat champion. So we'll kind of pick up our discussion a little bit later. But right now I want to kind of get into the Snowball Derby, Brian, because everybody knows this first weekend in December is a huge super late model weekend for race fans at Five Flags Speedway. And the website that probably has the best and most coverage of what happens at Five Flags Speedway for the Snowball Derby, the Snowflake 100, and all the other events that happen this weekend is speed51.com. They actually had live coverage as a pay-per-view. and fans could kind of check that out. But here to help us break down some of the drama of the weekend and some of the events that took place this weekend is their Northeast editor and social media director, Rob Blount. Welcome to the show, Rob.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be on.
Well, we're real happy that you were able to be on the show with us tonight. As you know, I've invited you a couple times before, and you've always had other obligations. So I'm particularly pleased that you're able to make it tonight.
Yeah, I'm very, very sorry about that. It's just, you know, how it is when you're on the road all the time. It just gets a little busy and a little hectic, and I just haven't been able to get on with you guys before, but I'm very glad that I'm able to now, especially to be able to talk about the Snowball Derby, which is one of my favorite races of the year.
Absolutely. And we're going to kind of switch between Brian Eberle and myself as we ask you some questions about the Snowball Derby and the Snowflake Derby this weekend. It is something that fans look forward to every single season, and if you haven't followed the Snowball Derby, the Snowflake 100 yet, you're really missing out. And I know a lot of people have that race on their bucket list as something they need to go to at some point before they die. So I know Sal Segala made that happen this weekend. He's usually our co-host. But tell us what makes the Snowball Derby and the Snowflake and 100 and all of those events at Five Speedway so special this weekend.
Well, I think the first thing, and we were all discussing it, all of us at Speed 51, we were discussing it throughout the week. I think one of the things that makes it such a cool event is that it's a non-points race. It's just it's basically just an end-of-the-year gathering for super late model teams to come down and race one last time before they gear up for the holidays and then gear up for the next season. There's no series that sanctions it. There's no points on the line. It's just a conglomeration of the greatest super late model teams from all over the country and even North America, really, because we had people from Canada try to come down here and race as well. So it's just really cool how many different teams you see and the different personalities, and everyone's goal is just to win that Tom Dawson Trophy on Sunday. They spend countless amounts of money on tires, on fuel, to try to win this race for a purse that pays less than what they're spending. But it's not about that. It's just about the trophy and to be able to say, I'm a Snowball Derby champion. And that's, to me, what is so cool.
Yeah, it's really amazing. You have over 60 drivers that are competing for 30, 31 spots. So you know half the field isn't going to be able to make it. So I think actually it was 21 people in total that did not make the show this year.
Yeah, it's Friday night, pole night, has to be the most stressful night in all of racing. I mean, you can talk about Indianapolis 500 pole day. You can talk about the Daytona 500 and the duels, but Snowball Derby pole night is, you can just feel the tension all day long. When you show up to the track at like 7 a.m. on Friday morning, you can just feel the tension building all day long. Team members haven't slept the night before. Drivers haven't slept the night before. Zane Smith told our Bob Dillner that before he got into the car for qualifying, he actually had to run back to the hauler because he had to go throw up. And that's how nervous he was to try to make that race. And he did. And he was kind of lucky because he didn't put down that great of a qualifying lap considering how fast his car was all week long. And when I spoke with Zane after he got out of the car, he said, man, I was just so nervous. And that's how stressful pole night is. You got over 60 drivers going for 30 spots on pole night. Everyone else has to come from that last chance race on Saturday night, and you don't want to be in that race. So pole night is, it might be, I mean, the race is Sunday, sure, but the most tension has to come on Friday night.
Yeah, absolutely. And Zane Smith, by the way, finished second in the official running order for the finish of that race. Now, I'm going to pass the baton over to Brian Eberle. I know he has a few questions for you, too.
Hey, Rob, how you doing? Thanks for coming on the show. And I just want to say first, you make a great point about the Snowball Derby being a non-point event, kind of one of the things that makes it so cool. You know, you've got no one there, you know, worried about points and things like that. Obviously, not to jump ahead from the whole race itself, but kind of what's your take on the whole tech process that they go through down there at the Snowball Derby? Do you think it's a good thing for the Derby, or do you think it's more, you know, we've got NASCAR fans saying that, you know, they deserve to see a winner before they leave the track. Kind of what's your take on that, and how do you feel about how the tech process goes down at the Snowball Derby?
I personally have long disagreed with NASCAR's process, so the fans deserve to know who won before they left. I personally want to know who the winner is that followed the rules of the race as they were written. And Ricky Brooks is one that follows the rules that are written, and he inspects every car to a T to make sure that they meet those rules. As we know, this isn't the first time that a Snowball Derby winner has been disqualified, and it's not the first time that Ricky Brooks has ever disqualified someone. To me, Ricky Brooks follows the rules the way they're presented, and I don't see anything wrong with that. I personally hate it for Christopher Bell that this happened. It's something that was out of his control, and the kid drove one heck of a race on Sunday. He wheeled that car all weekend long. I mean, look at what he did on Saturday night in the last chance race, starting dead last and winning that 50-lap race. That was an impressive piece of driving in itself. And then coming from the rear yesterday to go all the way up to the lead and take the checkered flag on Sunday. So he drove the wheels off of that number 51 car all weekend long. So for him, it's a real bummer, but the rule is the rule. And they were too heavy on the left side by 0.3%, which equals somewhere around 7 pounds too heavy on the left side. And Ricky gave them three chances to go over those scales. And all three times they were, unfortunately for Christopher Bell, too heavy.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. I think that, you know, the tech process is good. It gives you who the winner is. And it's on the same point, yeah, I hate to see it for Christopher Bell because, like you said, he drove the wheels off that thing. I covered the Winchester 400 and watched him drive the wheels off the car there. So, I mean, I think that, you know, it's tough for him, but I like knowing that that's the car that won. One of the things that I guess has come out, and they've said that they picked up, they think, extra weight on the car from the hot tires, picking up debris on the cool-down lap. I mean, what was kind of the consensus down there? Do people feel like that's a legit reason that could have happened? I mean, it just seems like a lot of weight to be picking up going around on the victory lap. But curious to get your thoughts there.
Some people mentioned that. I don't know if you could pick up 7 pounds worth of excess rubber doing your victory lap, but some people brought that up. From what I understand, the way the Kyle Busch Motorsports cars have the fuel cell mounted on the chassis is it's offset to the left side. So when fuel burns off over the course of a run, they will pick up more left side weight, which will help the car turn better over the course of a run. What it seems like is they miscalculated the amount of fuel that they put in the car over the last run, and that's more so what led to this. But to be 100% honest with you guys, I'm not the most technologically intelligent person out there, so I don't want to speculate where I probably shouldn't be speculating on things like that.
Right. Agreed. I appreciate your thoughts on that, Sharon.
You know, I agree with you too, Rob. I like the idea that, you know, we know who actually won that race based on following the rules as they're stated for all the drivers. And it sounds like Ricky Brooks really takes the time and takes his job very seriously in making sure that that's what happens. And I applaud him for that. I think it's a good thing. And I understand how some fans can be disappointed. I understand that. But at the same time, I would rather celebrate a winner who's doing it fairly and squarely than celebrate a winner who maybe pushed the envelope a little bit too far. So I wanted to talk to you too, Rob, though, about the pay-per-view over at speed51.com. You guys have done that for a few events this season, and the Snowball Derby is certainly a big weekend for a lot of fans. How did that go for you guys over there?
It went really, really smoothly. I was on pit road for the entire race. I wasn't on our broadcast yesterday. I was behind the scenes running our social media pages, but as far as I know and everyone within the organization I've spoken to, everybody was extremely happy with how the broadcast went. Our operations manager, Mark Keeler, did a fantastic job all week long making sure that everything was set up and running the way it needed to run. Just from the top down in the organization, from Bob all the way down, everyone did what they needed to do this weekend, and it produced what I believe was a fantastic product on the air live on our Speed 51 TV pay-per-views, as well as on all of the recorded pieces that we've put up on the Speed 51 network. I don't know if you guys saw it, but piece that Bob did on the disqualification process, it was just everything that happened was summed up wonderfully there. And if you guys aren't subscribers to the Speed 51 network, I strongly suggest that you guys sign up for it, because there's some great pieces out there, including highlights from the race that are still to come, onboard videos that are still to come. Like yesterday, we had an onboard camera in John Hunter Nemechek's car for the scary fire that happened on his car in the last few laps of that race. And the footage is just incredible that our onboard expert, Patrick Hahey, was able to bring to us. Everybody just did a really, really great job this weekend.
Yes, I am a member over there now, and I did watch the video that you referenced with Bob Dillner, kind of summing up all of the disqualification story. And you're right; it really was excellent information, and I really enjoy watching the videos and the news and everything that they put out over at speed51.com. So that's good to hear. Now, if the Snowball Derby continues to get bigger and bigger, it seems, every season, do you see it always staying at speed51.com, or is there some point where we might see a replay of that on, like, NBC or Fox?
That's something that I personally can't answer, but I know that Bob Dillner loves the Snowball Derby so much that he plans on having Speed 51 be a part of the Snowball Derby for pretty much eternity, because he loves this race that much. This is the race that he circles on his calendar every single year. It's his favorite event. It's a favorite of everyone at Speed 51, because it's really just the greatest event in short track racing, bar none.
Well, I suspected you might say exactly that, so it's good to hear. Brian, I'm going to give it back to you.
Oh, yeah, Rob, while we're talking about Speed 51 and their pay-per-views, you guys are also doing the pay-per-view this weekend for the Indy Indoor, the inaugural event there. Do you have some thoughts on that, and kind of let our listeners know how they can go about subscribing to that if they're interested?
Sure, absolutely. I'm glad you actually brought that up, because that's where, as you said, we are headed to next, is the inaugural Indy Invitational up in Indianapolis. That should be a lot of fun. It's, I believe, our second dirt race that we are going to be broadcasting on Speed 51 TV. We did the North Carolina Nationals at Friendship Speedway in Elkin, North Carolina, back in, I believe that was March this year. And this event has the potential to be something very, very cool. I know that they're trying to build it kind of like a Chili Bowl. They've extended invitations to a lot of very, very talented dirt midget racers and outlaw kart racers, which are a lot of fun. If you guys have never seen those outlaw karts race, they race at, where I've seen them at least, at Millbridge Speedway in Salisbury, North Carolina, just about a half an hour north of Charlotte. and guys like Christopher Bell and Kyle Larson and Rich Stenhouse will come down and run those carts from time to time and just put on a show. And Midgets on Dirt is always great, but that event will be very, very interesting. I'm not sure if you guys are aware of this, but they are not allowed to even start laying down the dirt until 3 a.m. on Saturday morning because the Pacers have a home game the night before. And then the Pacers have a home game on Sunday as well. So the dirt all has to be gone by Sunday so that the floor can be put back down. So, I mean, I am thrilled that I'm not on the team, the event team for the Indy Invitational as far as their crew goes, because they've got one whale of a day ahead of them on Saturday. But if they're able to pull off this event, I think it's got the potential to be very, very cool. Midgets on a quarter-mile track indoor is just awesome, as we all know from the Chili Bowl.
Yeah, that timeline you mentioned is crazy. I was wondering how tight it was going to be with knowing the Pacers have some home games coming up, but that's just nuts, especially when you look at how much time they spend setting up the track down at the Chili Bowl every year. So that'll be interesting. But, yeah, I'm headed out there to cover that for Motor Racing Digest this weekend, so I'll be excited to head there and check out the inaugural event.
Very, very cool. Sure. Well, I'll be up there as well. So if you see us, please come up and say hi. I love talk racing with you guys.
Yeah, definitely. I'll do that.
Okay. Now, I want to kind of get back to the Snowball Derby and the Snowflake 100. You mentioned John Hunter Nemechek. He actually won the Snowflake 100. He came really close to sweeping the weekend until that big fire that you talked about with his car. I wanted to get your thoughts there and, you know, what exactly happened there.
Well, the Snowflake 100 win, I think, was very, very cool.
Mm-hmm.
He's tried for a while to win that race. He's finished second a couple times. He finished second in that race last year when it ended, as we all know, at like 4:30 in the morning Central Time on Snowball Derby Sunday. but this year, when he won that race, that was actually his Snowball Derby car from last year that he used on Saturday night in the Snowflake 100 to win that one. So that car has now won 2 years in a row, Snowball Derby weekend, and it's won two different races, which I think is pretty cool. Sunday, I believe they said they don't know what broke, at least from what I spoke with them about 10 minutes or so after the race ended, but something broke just as soon as they took the lead on that late restart. And whatever broke knocked the brake line off, and the brake fluid got on the headers, and that's what led to the fire, ultimately leading to the fire, and he had no brakes, and that's ultimately what caused that whole situation.
So that was that. I know that was a huge disappointment for John Hunter Nemechek to not be able to compete for that win and defend his title because he won that last season. But at the same time, I think he had a good showing for the weekend. And I wanted to ask you, who do you think are the stars that kind of really shone the brightest this weekend? You know, Christopher Bell obviously had a great race car, did some great racing in spite of the disqualifications. But who are the stars that you see coming out of the Snowball Derby?
Well, I'll try to name you three, and the first one is actually your next guest, Ty Majeski. What an incredible weekend he had this weekend. When Ty and I spoke before, leading into the Derby, for a preview story that appeared on speed51.com, one of the things that he said he was nervous about was qualifying. And part of that stems back to last year when he spun out coming off of turn four in his first lap, and that put him into the last chance race. So he knows what it's like to miss the race out of qualifying and have to go to the last chance race and race his way in. The other part of that was he explained that they don't qualify up in Wisconsin. So that was a challenge for him, and he's been working on getting better at it, and he clearly showed that by winning the pole and setting the new track record for Five Flag Speedway on Friday night. And then he just had a great race, ran a very smart race, and as we know, ended up finishing third on Sunday. And so he just ran a really, really good race, and I believe turned a lot of heads especially following his win at the Florida Governor's Cup 200 a few weeks ago at New Smyrna Speedway. Ty's had a fantastic year. I believe he's won something like 18 races. So following ending his year with a podium run in the Snowball Derby was really good for him. Another one that I would give you is that just the Burton, the Jeff Burton Auto Sports team and Harrison Burton, what a weekend. Really fast. I mean, led the Snowball Derby preview a couple of weeks ago, the practice day leading into the Snowball Derby. Fast on Thursday, crashes the car at the end of the day. I mean,
that's so disappointing.
That car was destroyed, guys. That car was junk. And
yeah.
We spoke with the crew chief, Chris Wimmer, soon after the crash. They said, is it fixable? He said, we're done. That's it. And they didn't have a backup car because their backup car was involved in a heavy crash at the Winchester 400, and they didn't have time to get that fixed. So they didn't even have a backup car. And then upon further inspection, they looked at it more and said, maybe we might be able to pull this off. And with some help, because we all know that the racing community is great and loves to pitch in, they went down to Johanna Long Shop a couple miles down the road. Hunter Robbins helped out, and they reclipped that car and rebuilt it overnight. And he goes out and qualifies his way into the race. And they had a top 10 run going until the left rear hub broke. So that was impressive as well. And then Zane Smith. Zane Smith, again, fast all week. Didn't put down that great of qualifying run because he was just that nervous. And then goes and finishes second in the Snowball Derby. And could have won that race because he was running second with just a couple laps to go behind Christopher Bell. And he saw the smoke from the John Hunter Nemechek fire, and he checked up coming out of turn four. And Chase Elliott got by him. So
absolutely,
we could be talking about 16-year-old Zane Smith as your Snowball Derby champion right now.
I hear you. And I those are the three that I would have picked, too. You know I'm a big Jeff Burton fan, and I follow all of the Burton drivers. So I'm really excited to see Harrison Burton coming up through the ranks here. And I really am anxious to see what he does in his Can-Am series next season, because he did announce that he is going to be racing in the Can-Am Pro Series next year. Also, I think another interesting story behind Ty Majeski is that his crew is kind of guys from the shop that all kind of come together. He doesn't have a professional crew that some of these other teams have, and in the end, that may have been, you know, as good as they were under the circumstances, it may also have been a little bit of a disadvantage in keeping him from perhaps being the Snowball Derby winner.
Yeah, absolutely. I was very surprised to hear that it was just their group of guys that were going to be pitting that race car. You know, as you said, a lot of teams bring in a lot of high quality pit crews, from whether it's from the Excalibur pit crew school all the way down to we had some Penske guys pitting for Corey LaJoy. There were Stuart Haas Racing crew members pitting for Kyle Grissom, who unfortunately didn't get a chance to even do a pit stop because Kyle Grissom was involved in a crash before the first pit stop of the race. The Ryan Newman's pit crew was down there pitting for someone. I can't remember exactly who they were with, but there was high-quality teams down there, and yet the team that finished third was just the shop guys for Ty Majeski. So that's very impressive in itself.
It absolutely is. I'm going to go around one last time for any parting comments, Brian.
Yeah, maybe just one more thing to touch on, or that I found was interesting from the Snowball Derby that I didn't know about or didn't remember, is that after basically a 75 consecutive green lap run, they'll kind of throw a caution. Do you feel that's something that's good for the Snowball Derby and that short track race like that, because it does give does help the guys, I guess, a little bit that are at a disadvantage, not having to make green flag stops if they don't have the money to afford a cup caliber pit crew?
Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely part of it. The other part of it is this racetrack is just so abrasive because it hasn't been repaved in so long, and I really hope that it doesn't get repaved anytime soon. It just
right.
Eats up tires. So that's another reason behind it, is just to be able to bring these guys on payroll, to let these pit crews that are being brought down here and a lot of money being paid for them do their job on pit road. I see no problem with that 75-lap competition caution at all. One interesting wrinkle about it, though, is if that 75 laps is going to extend into the final 20 laps of the race, there will not be the competition caution. They will run it to the end. So it's not like it's just a definite 75 straight green flag laps, we throw that caution. They will not decide the end of that race with a competition caution like that. And I think that's something that's very important to keep in mind, as they're trying to keep the integrity of the race intact as much as possible.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree. I echo your sentiments. And, thanks for coming on the show, Rob. I appreciate your time tonight. I'll hand it back to Sharon.
Absolutely, Brian. Thanks for having me on, guys.
I will echo that sentiment. We really appreciate you being on, Rob. And before you go, I want to make sure fans know how they can follow speed51.com and yourself.
Well, speed51.com can be followed on Twitter at speed51dotcom, C-O-M. Same thing on Instagram. It's the same exact handle, speed51dotcom. You can like us on Facebook, speed51.com. Of course, the website, speed51.com itself. Like I said earlier, if you're not a member of the Speed 51 Network, I implore you to sign up for it. It's the cost of a value meal at McDonald's a month. It's affordable, and you get a lot of great content constantly. Everyone at Speed 51 puts in a lot of work to make sure that the race fans are getting what they're paying for. And Snowball Derby Week, the content that you're getting is just absolutely great stuff. We had, I believe, 26 people down here, and everyone worked their butts off to put out the greatest product that we possibly could put out for the race fans for their money's worth, and you're definitely going to get that. So please sign up for the Speed 51 Network, because it's really, really great stuff. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm on Twitter at Rob, B-L-O-U-N-T.
Okay. Again, Rob, really appreciate your insights. I think you gave us some great information. And I hope that we'll be able to find another opportunity to bring you back on the show.
Absolutely, guys. It was a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on.
Okay. Take care now. And good luck next weekend out there in Indianapolis.
Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.
All right. Great conversation here with Rob Blount from Speed 51. Really enjoyed that conversation, Brian.
Yeah, definitely. And if you weren't already, it gives you even more reason to want to go down to the Snowball Derby and attend that event. I know it's kind of one of those short track races on my bucket list. I got to cross the covering the Winchester 400 off my list this past October. And maybe next year will be the year where I can cross the Derby off.
Oh, I would love to join you, Brian, because I would love to be there, too. That's definitely on my bucket list and one of the events that I look forward to all year long, along with all the drivers who look forward to this event. And there's another event that's coming up out in the West. It's called the Spears Southwest Tour. They have a winter showdown that they started last season. They're going to have a second one this year later in the month. And we'll be talking about that a little bit later as well. And if not tonight, then we'll definitely talk about that next week. But I wanted to also talk a little bit about Ty Majeski before he comes on, because I was so pleased to hear Rob mention that he sees him as one of the stars coming out of the Snowball Derby this year. He took the pole. He broke the record. Christopher Bell, by the way, also broke the record. But when he was disqualified during that qualifying, Ty Majeski took over that role as pole sitter. But he also broke the record to take that pole. And then went into the race, raced at the front all race long, and then ended up third in the official race standing. So I thought that was pretty impressive. for Ty Majeski. He's normally from the ARCA Racing Series. He races the Midwest Tour. He's also raced in NASCAR's Whelen All-American Series at La Crosse, and we mentioned earlier that he won the Governor's Cup at New Smyrna Beach. So he's had just an amazing season this year, now with coming in third and taking the pole for the very prestigious Snowball Derby this season. So with that, I'm going to welcome to our show none other than Mr. Ty Majeski. Welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, we're really happy that you were able to make it on our show tonight and that we were able to work that out. I know you've had a series of radio shows that you've been on. Great exposure for you and your racing ability this weekend at the Snowball Derby. Did you meet your expectations for this weekend?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I definitely didn't expect to come home with a track record, that's for sure. You know, there's, you know, all the competition that's down there, it's so tough these days. You know, I just wanted to make the race on time and qualify in the top 30 so you could sleep well Friday night and, you know, focus on making a good adjustments for the race. And we were able to do that and, you know, come home with the top three finish. So really no complaints at all.
Okay, and talk a little bit about, because we had Rob Blount from Speed 51 on just before you, and he was talking about the pressure that is involved with the qualifying process at Five Flags Speedway for the Snowball Derby. And added to that is the fact that your race team doesn't really do qualifying out there in Wisconsin. Talk a little bit about that for you, because I think we also brought out that your crew is not like one of these crews that are coming from a Sprint Cup Series team. These are guys from the shop that are helping you go through this process at the Snowball Derby.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, first of all, back to qualifying, it's, you know, so tough to make the field. You know, last year, for example, we were very good in practice. I think we changed all four shocks and springs right before qualifying, so I didn't know what I had in the race car. And I just tried to get a little bit too much out of it and ended up spinning out during qualifying. Had to come through the last chance race and end up making the race that way. And this year ended up setting fast times, so it's just crazy, you know, how much pressure it is, and definitely the most pressure that I've felt in my young racing career. So I, you know, and into the race, you know, it's you know, one of the bigger prestigious races, and you know, I actually got more PR out of setting fast time and finishing third than I did winning the Governor's Cup. So just go to show how big this race really is.
And that is the attraction for the super late model drivers, I think, is the prestige of winning the Snowball Derby. And you know, you're a good example of drivers coming from all over the country to be in that event. So along with me tonight is our co-host for tonight, Brian Eberle. So I'm going to kind of pass the baton to him to ask a couple questions as well.
Hey, Ty, how you doing? First of all, thanks for coming on the show. But when you look at your run from this weekend, you know, you got some Twitter love from Ray Dunlap, a shout-out there. Kind of what does that mean to you to kind of catch the eye of, you know, guys that have been around the sport for so long and kind of, like you said, to get more attention from finishing third here than when you won the Governor's Cup?
Yeah, it means a lot. You know, my crew and I worked so hard, you know, trying to perform well and putting good race cars on the racetrack, and we've really done that this year. I think we ended up with 18 wins and 20 fast times throughout the season. And it's really cool to see our hard work get recognized by some individuals in the upper levels of racing in the country.
Definitely. Yeah, I'm also from the Midwest, so it's great to have a fellow Midwest guy on the show. With that being said, kind of what's one of some of your favorite tracks to run on in the Midwest?
I think my favorite track is Wisconsin International Raceway in Kaukauna, Wisconsin. It's not like anything else in the country, that's for sure. It's a half-mile D-shaped, pretty flat, and it's really rough. It's the roughest track that I've ever raced on.
It's got a ton of character to it. You know, I grew up racing go-karts on dirt tracks, and those had always rough and a lot of different character to them. So it definitely translates to my racing style well, and I do pretty well there.
That rough track surface, did that kind of help you at all with how rough they say the track is down at the Snowball Derby and at Five Flags?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, I think the biggest thing with Five Flags is the abrasiveness and how hard it is on tires. I mean, you see the pace fall off sometimes over a second in a 50, 60 lap run. So I think that's really the most unique part about Five Flags. You know, we don't have that abrasive of racetracks up in the Midwest like Five Flags, so it's definitely a learning curve for me. You know, I have to change my driving style because of that.
Thanks. Back to you, Sharon.
And that's something that I wanted to talk to you about, Ty, because I know that you were the 2014 ARCA Midwest Tour Champion and Rookie of the Year. I know you've raced in NASCAR's Wheel and All American Series. You finished eighth in the series point standings at La Crosse and didn't even race a full season there and still finished eighth in the series point standings. And you raced in New Smyrna for the Governor's Cup. You've now raced at the Snowball Derby. You mentioned you have 18 wins, so you've been a very, very successful driver. Are you racing the same kind of cars in all of those different series, or is it pretty much the same, or is it different?
They're very close. The only one that's a little bit different is at La Crosse Speedway in the NASCAR Wheel and All American Series. They have a little bit of less horsepower. Some of the technology isn't quite as well as the super late models, for example. We have to run, we can't run any bump stops or anything like that. And there's a shock rule. You can only spend X amount of dollars per shock. And as I mentioned before, there's a lot less force tolerance on a different tire. You have to weigh quite a bit more. So there's some differences there, but they look the same. It's the same body style and everything like that. But that's the only difference in all the race cars that I've run this year.
Okay, and you mentioned that you come from karts. I think that was you that mentioned that you came from karts and got into the super late models. Talk about your introduction into racing and how you got here. And there's an event that's taking place in Indianapolis this weekend. I'm wondering if you have done any open wheel racing, like the midget.
Yeah, I've never done any open wheel racing. It's always been, you know, I started in go karts when I was 9 years old. You know, ran local races and won multiple local championships. Moved up to the national level. Once we started winning national championships, we looked to move forward. I ended up getting in a limited late model here in the Midwest. They call them Big Eight late models, and I drove those for 2 years and then moved up into a super late model, really full time in 2014. So, you know, it's interesting to see all the big changes between running go-karts and stock cars, and as well as all the similarities between them. You know, I think, you know, go-kart racing really teaches you to be real smooth on the wheel, because you only turn the wheel sometimes an eighth of an inch, and it teaches you to be really consistent. That definitely has helped me run super late models.
Now, as far as your goals for 2016, are there any thoughts about going into the K&N series, or are you going to stay with the ARCA Midwest Tour, or what are your plans for 2016?
I'd love to move up into the K&N series, or maybe the ARCA, the big ARCA series that you see on TV, or maybe a few Camping World Truck Series races. So, you know, the door's open. I'm looking for opportunities to move up. But, of course, if nothing comes about, I'll be running the super late model again in 2016.
Okay. And so I know fans will want to follow you for that, and we'll get that information from you a little bit later. But, Brian, I wanted to kind of toss it back to you.
Yeah, Ty, kind of the second time around the table, so to speak, I kind of like to talk a little bit about what you enjoy doing away from the track. I mean, talk a little bit about kind of what you enjoy there and maybe what some of your plans are for the off season, so to speak.
Yeah, I'm a big iRacer. iRacing.com sponsored me, and they supported me the last year. And looking forward to partnering up with them again in 2016. It's an online simulator. Keeps me sharp throughout the off season. They do a great job. They have Five Flag Speedway on there, New Smyrna Speedway, and all those tracks I've ran at in real life, and it's just amazing how close they get the racetrack. So they do a great job, and that's definitely something I'll be doing my off season to keep me sharp.
Thanks, Jim.
Okay. Ty, thanks for taking the time to be in with us tonight. I really hope you do get an opportunity to race in either ARCA or the K&N Pro Series for next season, and you'll have to keep us posted on that. But I also want to make sure that you give a shout-out to your team, because I think they just did a remarkable job this weekend at the Snowball Derby. Let's talk about your crew chief and the guys who were behind you in this.
Yeah, they do a great job. Toby Noodleman's my crew chief, and all the guys at Team M Motorsports, they gave me a great race car. You know, we needed some little bit of track position there at the end to compete for the win. I felt like, you know, with the 51 getting disqualified in tech, I felt like maybe we had a little bit better race car than the next two guys in front of us. But, you know, they make my job easy. You know, the communication with Toby and I has been really good the last year, and we've put really good race cars out on the racetrack, and that definitely showed in our performance. And I can't thank them enough for all they've done for me.
Okay. Now, I don't want to put you on the spot here, so if you don't want to answer this, you don't have to, okay? But I wanted to get your thoughts about the inspection process at Five Flags Speedway. And just, you know, from a driver's point of view, they have a pretty strict guideline for following the rules. And their inspection room, I think, has the nickname of the Room of Doom. What are your thoughts about that at Five Flags Speedway? And is that something that you think is good for the sport there?
You know, Ricky Brooks does a great job. You know, he's, as everybody knows, you know, it's nicknamed the Room of Doom for a reason. He's real strict on the rules. It's black or it's white. You know, I remember last year, I think Travis Braden was just a little bit over. I think it was a tenth of a percent over on left side weight in the last chance, and he ended up not making the race because of it. So, you know, the only thing that I ask from any tech guy throughout the country is that they're consistent. That's the biggest thing. You know, unfortunately, Christopher Bell got it twice in one weekend. But unfortunately, the rules are the rules. And, you know, we rehang a whole new body on the race car just to go down and race with Ricky Brooks, because we know the rules are much more strict down there. And we know that going in, we played it really safe on left side weight. I think we weighed, you know, 57.5 left side weight all weekend. It's just, it's not worth the risk, you know, because we know how black and white Ricky is.
Okay, and I think all of the drivers have to know that pretty much, because he certainly has the reputation for being really tight on his inspection process. And I agree. I think Christopher Bell is a great driver. I think it's unfortunate that it happened for him this weekend, and not just once but twice. But at the same time, you know, it gave an opportunity for people like you to take the pole and to go out there and show what your race team can do. And I think you did a great job of that, Ty.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it.
Now, can you make sure that fans know how they can follow you, Ty, and how you can, how fans can kind of keep track of what you might be doing? What's next for you? Let's put it that way first. So what's next for you after the Snowball Derby?
Yeah, I'll be at the PRI show this coming weekend, and we have the big ARCA. I'll be getting recognized as the ARCA Midwest Tour Champion at the ARCA Racing Series Banquet Saturday night. And then Monday I'll fly out to Carolina and attend the Kawicki Driver Development Program Banquet, which I won as well, so really looking forward to that. And then I have schooling going on here, and we'll have Christmas break, and do a little snowmobiling through Christmas break, and go back to school in January, and then our next race will be Speed Weeks in February.
Absolutely. Oh, that sounds great. Now, do you have snow up there in Wisconsin? Because it all melted down here in Chicago.
No, we don't have snow. Yeah, it all melted. You know, we're having pretty warm temperatures for this time of the year, so hopefully it'll cool off. We can get some snowmobiling in.
Okay, well, I hope that works out for you. Ricky, what are your social media handles so that fans can follow you and keep track of, you know, your plans beyond Speed Weeks?
I'm at Ty Majeski on Twitter, so just at Ty Majeski. You can follow Ty Majeski Racing on Facebook. My mom does a great job keeping that page updated. You know, that's kind of the best way to keep up with me right now. So, yeah, go out on Facebook and like Ty Majeski Racing and give me a follow on Twitter.
All right. And again, Ty, we thank you so much for being available and being on the show with us tonight. We really enjoyed the conversation with you, and we hope to have you back again sometime during the next season, okay?
Yeah, absolutely. Have me on any time. Thank you.
Okay, take care now.
Okay, bye.
All right, Brian, that was Ty Majeski. He finished third in the Snowball Derby at Five Flags Speedway this weekend. He was also the pole sitter at Five Flags this weekend. Has had just a phenomenal season in 2015, and it sounds like he's going to be doing some celebrating at some upcoming banquets here. So pretty exciting year.
Yeah, definitely. Anytime you can go out and win 18 races, no matter what series you're running, anywhere in the country, I think that's a pretty impressive, and you know what he's been doing. It came kind of to a culmination down there at the Snowball Derby, putting that together, that great run, and being able to do it with, you know, basically a pit crew that wasn't the same professional caliber as some of the Cup guys that come down there and run. So I think that makes it all the more impressive with his third place result.
Absolutely, you know, I actually read that Dale Jr.'s crew chief was down at the Snowball Derby for somebody. Do you remember who it was?
I didn't see that, but I did see it. There's a lot of, several Cup pit crew guys down there from some of the big-name teams. So it's, you know, kind of one of those tough issues where you wish that it was an equal playing field, so to speak, with the pit crew guys, and not all about the money, but, you know, money drives it all at the end of the day. So you got to do the best you can with what you've got. And I think that, you know, when that happens and you get a solid top five finish, a third place finish, where Ty ended up with his crew from, you know, back home, I think is all the more impressive.
I couldn't agree with you more. I just thought that whole Snowball Derby weekend was just fantastic. And I know Speed 51, again, I want to give kudos to them with the job that they do. Rob Blount mentioned that they had several people there this weekend to make sure the fans got everything that was going on at the racetrack. And they just do all year long for a lot of these short track races, and we always encourage fans to get out there to the racetrack. They cover those races all season long and just do a phenomenal job. So kudos and a big shout out to Speed 51 for what they do for race fans. And then by the way, Bob Dillner and his wife Angie. Sorry.
Oh, man, no worries. Yeah, I was just going to second what you said. I mean, I think it's a great site for anything short track racing, and from across the country. They just cover so much, and they do such a great job with what they have. And I think, you know, their focus on the Snowball Derby really kind of helps get it out there to people across the country and helps build that and, you know, gives exposure to drivers that, you know, you may not have ever heard of before. So I think that's fantastic, and I look forward to them continuing to increase their coverage.
Right. Now, we couldn't get Bob Dillner on the show tonight. I think over the weekend he kind of picked up some laryngitis and wasn't available to be on with us tonight, but I guarantee you we'll continue to try to get him on the show, because I know I thought it was an interesting comment from Rob that the Snowball Derby is his absolute favorite event of the season as well.
And he probably lost his voice. The poor guy's probably exhausted after everything he put into this weekend, pouring his heart and soul into their coverage of the whole event weekend. So hopefully, yeah, we can get him on the show maybe in some of the coming weeks here.
Absolutely. We'll definitely work on that, Brian. Now, you guys also mentioned this event that's happening with the midgets out at Indianapolis. You're going to be there this weekend, right?
Yeah, I am. I'm going to cover it for Motor Racing Digest, so you know, pretty excited. I've been to the Chili Bowl for the last couple of years, not to cover it, but just with my dad. It's an annual event we've gone to with some friends and always had a good time. So this will be my first time ever covering a dirt race, so I'm kind of excited about that. And you know, I think it's a solid field, and it'll be a great event. Hopefully, it gets picks up real well and draws attention in the first year, and it's something that they can continue. But, you know, for the NASCAR people, there are a couple big NASCAR names in the field, Kyle Larson, Ricky Stenhouse Jr., and Christopher Bell, as well as many guys known well throughout the dirt racing community. You got Brian Clausen in the field, Chris Windham, Alex Bright, back to another NASCAR guy, J.J. Yaley's running it, Spencer Baston, just a ton of different guys, Kevin Thomas Jr., Tanner Thorson. So obviously the Keith Coons cars will be strong as they always are, but I think it's a pretty solid field, and I think it'll be a great event on Saturday night, so I'm really looking forward to it.
Okay, I was waiting for you to say Rico Abreu. Rico's not going to be there, huh?
He's not. He was invited, I know that. I think he had some sort of conflict already from what I remember, but I think he was one of the first guys that was sent an invite for sure. So, yeah, that was a little disappointing. I would love to see him in the field, but
I think we're going to see great things from him. So if we don't see him there, I'm sure we'll see Rico Abreu in the coming weeks.
I'm sure he'll be back down at the Chili Bowl in a few weeks to defend his title there. So that'll be fun to watch as well.
Absolutely. I think it will be a lot of fun to watch. And thank you for sharing with us that you're going to be out there this weekend in Indianapolis. This is the first time that they've done this. You think this is something that's going to become an annual event?
I would sure like to hope so. I mean, I kind of think of it as almost a mini Chili Bowl, if you will. You know, obviously, the Chili Bowl drew over 325 plus. Yeah, the Chili Bowl itself drew over 325 drivers last year. It is a whole week-long event, so I think nothing will ever top that in my mind, especially being from the Midwest and not really having a place to watch racing in the winter. So the Chili Bowl obviously will always be number one, but I think this is another great event that they've added, and they're going to try to make work, and hopefully the drivers enjoy it, and hopefully it draws a good fan turnout and people tuning in on the pay-per-view at B51, and it'll be something that they can continue. I mean, it's obviously always tough to get events to work and to draw, you know, a fan base, but hopefully this will work and hopefully fill some fans' desires for racing here as we kind of go into a little bit of a drought, especially in the Midwest during the off-season between now and the start of Speed Weeks at Daytona.
I think it's great, especially for us fans that are in, race mode hiatus with the Sprint Cup Series and all of NASCAR's top three ending their season. We've got this lull here before the holidays, and then everything starts picking up again in January. Now, I mentioned, too, that the Spears Southwest Tour does a winter showdown. They started that last year. They're going to have their second annual event this season, and I'm hoping that we can get Brian Olson back on the show. I'm going to put a request out to him to talk about this next event that's coming up. Derek Thorne, we had him on the show a couple weeks ago, is a big favorite for that event. I really was so sad for Derek Thorne because I know he went into the Snowball Derby this weekend with high expectations, feeling really ready to maybe go after that victory this weekend. But look for him to be a strong contender at that winter showdown. Are you still with me, Brian?
Oh, yeah, sorry. I didn't realize I had the mute button hit there. My apologies, but yeah, I think that's another great event that I honestly don't know a whole lot about. So I think it's always great when we get the opportunity to kind of promote those events on this show as well, and have drivers that are involved in those races on as well. So as much as people say it's the off season, there's still some great racing to be had and followed at places throughout the country.
Exactly. I don't know this for sure, but I'm almost guessing. Well, I am guessing, but I'm pretty sure that you're going to see drivers like Noah Gregson, Dalton Sargeant, and other drivers that we know from the K&N West Series and the ARCA Racing Series that will be making the trek out there. Last year, Bubba Pollard from the East went out to the West to participate in that event, and we know that a lot of those West drivers made the trek out to the Snowball Derby down in Pensacola, Florida. So it's kind of nice to see drivers from all over the country participating in all of these events.
Yeah, it's definitely great to see kind of the best of the best from regions throughout the country that don't always get a chance to race against each other. So I think that's always great to see and ups the competitive level, as obviously everyone wants to represent their region proudly and make it look like they're the best and most competitive.
Absolutely. Now, any other news that you want to make sure we talk about before we close out the show? We've got about 5 minutes here, Brian.
You know, I don't think there's anything that that I'm really kind of aware of here from the last couple of weeks, aside from some of the changes in the executive leadership at NASCAR and the Sprint Cup Series banquet. I feel like it's been kind of quiet. I'm sure it's been quite busy behind the scenes, and we should be seeing some more driver announcements coming out for next year here in the next couple of weeks before we kind of head into the holiday week. So I think it'll be interesting to watch to see where some of these guys can land prior to 2016.
Absolutely, and we'll talk a lot more in depth about that on next week's show. But I will say that we've had banquets already for the Camping World Truck Series, the Xfinity, and the Sprint Cup Series. Next week, or this coming weekend, is the banquet for the Touring Series of NASCAR. That includes the K&N Pro Series, the Canadian Tire Series, the which, by the way, they just announced a new title sponsorship with Penties for that Canadian Tire Series. It will now be known as the Sprinty. I'm sorry. I can't believe I said that. The Penty Series. That was just announced today. But then there's also, you know, the Wheel and All-American Series that you hear us talk about, it, the Southern Modified Series, all of those touring series, the Euro Series, the Toyota Mexico Series, all of those series are going to be recognized this weekend in Charlotte. So that's the next big banquets that are coming up as well.
Exactly. It's also the ARCA Racing Series banquet this weekend in Indianapolis as well. So
a lot of banquet info that fans can look for, all the photographs. There were a lot of photographs on Twitter from the Sprint Cup Series banquet and continue to be put out on Twitter from the banquets for the NASCAR's top three. So I expect a lot of the same this weekend for the Touring Series.
Right. I think that the pictures everyone wants to see from the banquet in Vegas is what happened after hours with some of these guys. I'm sure there are some pretty good stories and some pretty funny things to be had there that we may never see or hear about, but I'm sure everyone had a great time. I don't know anyone that's, well, I mean, I guess you can have a bad time in Vegas if you're okay. If you're okay losing money, though, I don't think you'll ever have a bad time in Las Vegas.
That's true. How cool was that for Kyle Busch to go back to his hometown to celebrate his championship? I thought that was really awesome. And his brother, Kurt Busch, got a little emotional over his championship celebration as well. Very cool for those brothers, since the Labonte brothers, to be the first brothers since then to both win championships in NASCAR Sprint Cup Series.
Yeah, that's very cool, and it had to be a really cool experience to be back in his hometown to kind of celebrate this as well. You know, I'm sure he had a lot of friends and family there to celebrate the experience, so it's pretty cool to see him be able to go back there and celebrate the 2015 championship, and we'll see if he can do it again.
Absolutely. Now, I want to do a shout-out for Kenny Bruce, too. He put out a really interesting article on NASCAR.com about the history of the Sprint Cup Series celebration, and there were some comments in there from Darrell Waltrip about how, you know, they used to do it down in Daytona and how that all evolved into the New York celebration and then eventually to the Las Vegas celebration. I know a lot of people seem to think that, you know, it would be better back in New York, but actually I think a lot of the drivers really liked the celebration in Las Vegas, and just for the fact that it's not as much work as it was for them in New York, and there's a lot more leeway for them out in Las Vegas. So if you haven't taken a look at that article, take a look at it, because it really is an interesting perspective on that banquet for the Sprint Cup Series. Did you get a chance to see that, Brian?
No, I haven't, no, but I'll definitely check it out, because, yeah, I'm kind of on the same page there. I think Vegas is a great spot to have the banquet. You know, yeah, you could make the argument that it might fit better in Daytona or New York, gives you more of the corporate access, but I just think it's cool to have it out in Vegas. I've obviously never been there in Vegas for the banquet, but I just feel like it's got to be a really cool atmosphere doing the victory lap and the burnouts on the strip and just everything that goes on there. And, you know, I think that gives them potential to kind of draw in more of a fan base as well by being out there. So I think it's a good location. I think, you know, drivers and teams, I think, seem to like it. So I'm good with it. And, yeah, definitely want to check out Kenny's article to read his thoughts.
Okay. Well, with that, let's make sure fans know how they can follow you, Brian, and we'll go ahead and close out the show. You have anything coming for Fan for Racing this week?
Yeah, hopefully. I think I was going to do up an article based on Ty's comments here tonight, just because I think, you know, sometimes people don't have a chance to always listen to us on the show, but sometimes there's some, you know, good articles and good stories and good quotes that can kind of come out of what we do here on the show. So I was thinking of doing something like that to give us a little bit something different. And then I will be in Indianapolis this weekend. I'm also going to the PRI, Performance Racing Industry Trade Show, that kind of leads into the weekend at Indianapolis. So that's like one of the biggest trade show conventions there is in the racing world. I've never been there before, but I'm pretty excited to go check that out and cover that Thursday and Friday, see if there's any announcements that come out of there. From what I've heard, though, there'll be some IndyCar-related announcements for sure, and then leading into the weekend with covering the Indy Invitational on Saturday night. So looking forward to what will be my last race of the 2015 calendar year, and looking forward to what 2016 holds.
Absolutely. So definitely give at @BEberly18 a follow on Twitter, and I'm sure he'll keep you all up to date with what's going on there. And the article on Ty Majeski is awesome. I didn't get a chance to do a feature article for him because we found out so late that he was indeed going to be available for the show. So that would be a great follow-up to the show to have that feature article on him. And thank you for doing that. I really appreciate it. And with that, I think we'll go ahead and close it out. Just one last comment that I want to make. I agree with you that all of the drivers made just really great, great speeches at the banquet. If you get a chance to see the replays of that, definitely do that. Or if you go to NASCAR.com, you can probably listen to a lot of the banquet speeches there as well. But I thought it was so touching, too. I was so happy that Martin Truex Jr. is one of the top four drivers this season. And he also gave a very touching tribute to his partner, Sherry Pollux, who is battling, is, you know, dealing with cancer. And, you know, and I know that has changed his whole perspective on life and racing and everything that he does. So I've really been impressed with Martin Truex Jr., and I look for him to have another good year next season. So that's my final comments. Any final comments from you before we sign off?
No, kind of along that in regards to the banquet, I think it was probably one of the more emotional banquets I remember seeing in a while, just
Isn't
with, you know,
so?
Gordon's retirement, and, you know, Truex's speech, and with everything that his, you know, his girlfriend Sherry Pollux has been through this year, as well as, you know, Kyle Busch and what he's been through with the injury and kind of his tribute to Samantha. I feel like it was kind of, you know, sometimes those award shows can be a bit boring and drawn out. I'm not saying it still wasn't at parts, but I think that, you know, for people that didn't have a chance to catch the banquet, at least go online and find Kyle Busch, Martin Truex, and Jeff Gordon's speeches, because I definitely think all three of them are well worth your time to listen to, regardless of what driver you may or may not be a fan of.
Absolutely, and I couldn't agree more. So with that, Brian, thank you so much for being a part of the show tonight. I really appreciate your input and the questions that you ask. You're a great addition to our show, and we'll look forward to chatting with you down the road here. I'm not sure if you're going to be on next week or not.
No, I won't be able to be on next week, actually. Next Monday, I'm having knee surgery, so I will be out of commission for a little bit.
So. Oh, okay, and we wish you the best with that. We'll be sending prayers your way, Brian. I know you have that ACL that you're going to be getting the knee surgery for, and I hope you're a whole new bionic man afterwards.
Yeah, I hope so. It should go well. I'm not necessarily looking forward to kind of being down and having to rest for a couple weeks after. I'm kind of a on-the-go kind of person all the time. So if anyone's got any good book recommendations or Netflix series I need to catch up on, I'm open for suggestions, because I have to find a way to to entertain myself without too much movement here for the couple of weeks until after Christmas time. So looking forward to a good, hopefully quick recovery and being back to covering some more racing as soon as possible.
Okay. Couldn't agree more. And again, best wishes to you. Since I'm not going to talk to you because we are taking that two-week break after the 14th, I wish you and your family the very best holiday season here and Happy New Year. And I look forward to working with you going into the 2016 season.
Yeah, definitely. I echo those sentiments. Happy holidays to you and your family and to all of our listeners out there. Thanks for the people that do tune in and listen and retweet our tweets and interact with us. I think it's fantastic, and I really appreciate everything that the listeners have done, as well as you've done for me so far this year, Sharon, and I do look forward to what we can do in 2016.
Absolutely, and I second your recognition of our listeners and the support that they give us throughout the season. We'll do a lot more of that recognition next week as well. So thank you very much, Brian, and take care.
Thanks, you too. Have a good one.
You too. And we'll call that a wrap. Good night, everybody.